On January the 12th, 2007, workers in Washington, D.C. arrived for their morning commute to a seemingly normal sight. There was, as they passed through the metro station between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m, a violinist busking. It's a common sight in D.C., just as it's a fairly common sight, perhaps, here in London. He wore jeans, a baseball cap. He played a number of classical pieces. He didn't make a huge amount of money, around about $32 over the course of that hour. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. But there was, in fact, nothing ordinary at all about that particular musician. His name is Joshua Bell, and he is an internationally renowned violinist whose concert a few days before had sold out at $100 per ticket. And yet nobody that morning in Washington, D.C. recognized who he was. The stunt was set up by the Washington Post newspaper to see if people would recognize talent on their morning commute. And the answer was very clear. They simply did not. They just walked by assuming that this busker was, well, a musician certainly, but no one to pay attention to. Apparently they counted around about 1,000 people passed Joshua Bell on their way to work. Only 7 stopped for even a moment. None of them guessed who he was. You see, those commuters in Washington, D.C. failed to see who was right in front of them. And as we open our Bibles this evening, as we look into Luke's gospel, Luke, as he writes, wants us to make sure that we do not make the same mistake. Luke is deeply concerned with the question, who is Jesus? It's a question that he forces us to ask again and again as we read through this account of the life and the death and resurrection of Jesus. It runs through the previous encounter that we looked at last week in the first part of chapter 7. And it will certainly come up again next week as we look at the next episode in chapter 7. And between these two sections is this little incident in verses 11 to 17. A short account. It's only included in Luke's gospel. And it is a little episode, but it is far from insignificant. Both for those who are involved in what happens, and for Luke, as he asks us the question, who do you think Jesus is? Because here in this short account, we have two key aspects of Jesus' identity shown to us. Luke wants us to understand them clearly. And here's the first of them, that Jesus is compassionate. He is compassionate. You see, the account starts with Jesus and his disciples traveling to the town of Nain. Now, Nain is a town that still exists today. It's not very easy to see on that map, but again, in general gist, up by the Sea of Galilee is just kind of west of there, towards the bottom of the Sea of Galilee, is Nazareth. And just below Nazareth is the town of Nain. It's right on the edge of Samaria. So it's right on the edge of the territory of Galilee. And Jesus and his disciples were traveling from the city of Capernaum. That's right at the top of the Sea of Galilee, that sort of large lake at the top of the map there. Jesus and his disciples travel from the city of Capernaum, where the incident in the first part of the chapter had occurred. Now, I don't know if you could tell on that map, but to travel from Capernaum at the top of the Sea of Galilee round to Nain, which is just below the Sea of Galilee, would have taken about a day's journey. So Jesus and his companions arrive late in the day to the town gate of Nain. And as they arrive, as they travel into the town, they find a crowd coming out of the town. A funeral procession is on its way out of the town gate. And since coming into contact with a grave would have meant a Jewish person would be ceremonially unclean, the dead would be buried outside of the town. And so the funeral procession moves out of the town where people lived into the surrounding countryside as Jesus and his friends move in towards it. In fact, Jesus may well have heard the funeral group before he saw them. Noise was an essential part of Jewish mourning. Even the poorest of people would have made sure that they could afford at least 2 flutes and 1 wailing woman. We've got one flute and... No, I'm not going to go there. But the point here is that they would have been involved to make sure that there was noise and clamour around the funeral procession. The flutes would have played one tune and perhaps somebody would have been there with cymbals clashing discordantly out of tune and out of time to make sure that the discordant rackets match the discordant nature of loss and grief. And it encouraged the mourners to express their pain in sound and weeping. But as we read this little account, I don't imagine they needed a great deal of encouragement to grieve. Because we're told that this person who died is the only son of his mother. And his mother is also, we're told, a widow. No doubt having grieved her husband, she now has to grieve the loss of her son. The word that Luke uses makes it unclear whether this was a boy or a young man. Could easily have been someone perhaps in their early 20s. But it doesn't really matter. For a parent to bury their child is an immensely painful thing. The grief and loss must have poured out from her and out from those who knew her. We're told that there was a large crowd following this widow out of the town, and there was a large crowd following Jesus too. Two groups of people coming together. At the head of one would have been Jesus, at the head of the other would have been the mother leading the funeral procession for her son. And if you can imagine it, in the countryside surrounding the town of Nain, it wouldn't have been a very big town. And as you looked outside the town, you've seen these two great crowds tapering down to one point, to two people, Jesus and the widow, coming together. And Jesus stops to meet her. In fact, this is why Jesus has come here. Luke records no other facts about Jesus' visit. Nain occurs nowhere else in the Bible. It is here for this encounter. Jesus is here for her. And the key verse for the nature of this encounter is there for us in verse 13. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. His heart went out to her. Well, not really, actually. The original doesn't mention the heart at all. Instead, it talks about the guts. That would have been the seat of the emotions for ancient Hebrews. His insides are moved by the plight of this poor woman. It is the strongest possible word that Luke could have used to demonstrate the emotion that Jesus feels. His very stomach turns. It is deep and genuine. He is moved to his very core at the grief and loss she is experiencing. Well, for us, the heart, rather than the guts, is known as the seat of the emotion. So yes, Jesus' heart went out to her. He cared for her. He loved her. My friends, do you know this Jesus? Do you know this man who preached to crowds but had time for the struggles of an individual? Do you know this Jesus who spoke to people of power and influence and met with people in pain and suffering? Do you know this Jesus whose heart breaks over heartbreak and who suffers for the suffering of others? Do you know that Jesus is moved? You see, I think we can create an image of God who is powerful and cosmic and mighty, but who never ever feels, who never cares. A God who is majestic but never moved. And the trouble with that kind of picture of God is that he's distant. He's detached from the pain and the suffering of our fallen world, from the loss and grief that we experience, from the troubles and difficulty and worries of our lives. He seems unmoved and uncaring. He is, if you like, a stoic, just putting on a brave face on suffering and enduring without emotion. But that is not the God of the Bible. It is not the God that we see in the Lord Jesus Christ. You see, in Jesus, we see that God is not a stoic. He cares. He is moved to his core. He is compassionate. He is not distant or detached from the suffering of this world. Instead, he came down and entered the suffering. Came down to bear our suffering. See, Luke wants us to understand this is the Jesus we come to encounter, a Jesus who is compassionate and caring. And maybe you've come this evening worried that God is unconcerned for your plight, uncaring about your situation. If that is you, see again how Jesus moves towards this widow in compassion. And see in this how Jesus moves towards you in compassion too. Jesus is compassionate. But you know, compassion is not enough. It is wonderful. It is amazing. It is something to revel in and to reflect on, but it is not enough. We need to know more. We need to know that this compassionate Jesus is also powerful. Remember that key verse? Verse 13. Look with me again at what it says. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry. Don't cry." Let me tell you, this is some kind of dreadful pastoral care on the part of Jesus here. I mean, this is the worst thing that you could possibly say. Everyone knows this is not the kind of thing you say to a grieving widow. You know, I've had the privilege of taking a number of funerals over my time. And one of the first things you say to people who have had a loss is, it's okay to cry. In fact, it's good to be able to express the emotion and the loss and the grief that you feel, to let the tears come. Don't try and put a brave face on it. Don't hold in the emotions, let them out. Face the loss that you feel. And here is Jesus saying, don't cry. You wouldn't get very far at vicar training college with that kind of attitude. But again, we mustn't read this and think as if Jesus has sort of some horribly British stiff upper lip, as if emotions are never to be shown. No, that's not what's going on here at all. Well, Jesus means his words, don't cry. But from anyone else's lips, they would be crass and insensitive and uncaring. But not so from Jesus. Because look at what he does next. Verse 14. He stepped up and touched the bier. This is the open stretcher that the body would have been laid upon, probably covered with a cloth, but not in a coffin as we might be used to, just on an open stretcher taken out to where the body would be buried. And immediately as Jesus does this, the bearers, the people carrying this stretcher, stop. They know that something is up. And they know that something is up because Jesus has just done something that nobody would choose to do. Jesus has just made himself ceremonially unclean. Jewish people were not allowed to touch a dead body. They were not allowed to touch anything that a dead body was laid upon. If you did so, you would need to offer sacrifices. You would need to go through a period of cleansing in order to be dealt with, in order to go back to the temple, back to worship. Nobody would touch a funeral bier unless they had to, like those who are carrying it. But Jesus does. He steps up. He doesn't shy away from the very center of the grief. He goes and he touches the bier and he speaks. There are no actions here like some of his other healings. Here he does no more than speak some words, but they are words with power. Young man, I say to you, get up. And he does. Just stop there for a moment. Jesus speaks those words and the dead are raised. I mean, Luke just records it almost as a matter of fact. Jesus said those words and the guy sat up and he started speaking. As if that happened every day. It does not. This is a world-changing event. The very fabric of the universe is being ripped and overturned and overruled by the very words of Jesus. Here is a man of absolute power that when he speaks, the dead rise. The person who was dead is alive again. And he sits up and he speaks up. And Jesus gives him back to his mother. Now that's a very important point. Do you see how Luke notes that? He doesn't just say the dead man sat up and began to talk. He said Jesus gave him back to his mother. Because in some ways his mother was raised to life as well. Being a widow, with no man in the family in the first century to provide for her, she was without income, without anyone to care for her. She would likely have been subject to poverty. But Jesus reaches out and raises her as well. See, this little sermon series we're looking for in the evening is called Good News to the Poor. But Jesus is not only about good news to the economically poor. He is that. But he is also about good news for the poor more generally. Because poor can encompass all those who have needs that only God can meet. And that is each one of us. You see, this story here in the middle of Luke chapter 7 gives us a tremendous example of what our poverty truly is. Because each one of us is poor when it comes to death. When it comes to grief. When it comes to loss. We're all paupers in the face of death. We long to deal with it. We long to find answers. We long to find the reasons. We long to be able to conquer it. And we know we do not have the resources. In ourselves, we simply cannot deal with the question of death. We bury it. We forget about it. We distract ourselves from it. But as soon as we think about it, as soon as we ask to face up to it, we realize we are poor. We are in need. Came across a very striking example of this. In a garden on Japan's east coast stands a phone booth. It doesn't work. It has a phone, but it's not connected to anything. And yet, it has been used by more than 10,000 people. It's been used since the 2011 earthquake and tsunami that cost the lives of 15,000 people and displaced hundreds more, thousands more. The booth is known as the phone booth of the winds. And it was built by a 69-year-old so that local residents could communicate with loved ones who are dead or missing. The line is not connected, but callers still use the phone to try and speak to the departed, to write messages on a notepad, trusting that the wind will carry them to their intended recipients. It's a very vivid example of what we long to be able to do. We long to be able to find an answer in the face of death. We long to be able to reach out and find a way to reconnect with those we have lost. We long to know how to deal with death, to find the answer, but by ourselves we cannot. We are simply, as it were, sending messages into the wind. But here in this little episode, we find that Jesus is powerful. He is powerful enough even to defeat death. And in this story, we see it clearly, and we see it even more clearly in Jesus' own death and resurrection. On Easter Sunday, as he himself bursts from the tomb, conquering death, and telling us that there is hope in the face of death. There is one who has gone through death for us, and who is powerful to provide the answer to death, the answer to our poverty. And that is wonderful hope in the face of a world full of fear and despair and of darkness. Well, the crowd responds to this amazing story. They respond in verse 16 with awe and praise, as you would expect. People don't rise from the dead every day. They're amazed, overwhelmed by it. And they say, a great prophet has appeared among us. Perhaps alluding to similarities between this encounter and miracles performed in the Old Testament by Elijah and Elisha. God has come to help his people, is their conclusion. And for the people of the time, that was perhaps a general way of saying, God has done something good. But their words are literally true. God has come in the person of Jesus, and he has come to help his people. In Jesus, we see what God is like. That he is both compassionate and powerful. And we need both of those, don't we? Compassionate is not enough. Because then we just end up with a God who cares and feels and weeps, but is never able to act. And sadly, some people have tried to twist and distort the God of the Bible to be like that, but it's not a true picture. Nor do we really long for a God who is powerful but not compassionate. For then you're left with a God who is, frankly, terrifying. One who's detached, uncaring, unable to relate to our sins and our struggles. But Jesus reveals to us the God who is truly there. The living God, the true God, who is both compassionate and powerful. The God who cares and is able to save. My friends, do you know this God? Have you come face to face with this God in the person of Jesus Christ? Have you met him? Or have you forgotten about him? In the midst of your struggles and your difficulties, in the midst of pain and loss, in the midst of the sufferings of this life, have you forgotten that God who is there, who reaches out to you, is both compassionate and powerful? He cares, and he is able to save. Come to him and know his compassion for your struggles and his power to save.